Live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Scott Wapner in tonight for Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Jeff Mills, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And tonight on Fast Markets, racing to new records. But if you think we've gone too far too fast, we have three names you might want to own. Plus, shares of Twitter taking flight. So is it time to give a second look to this social climber? And shares of Aurora Cannabis tanking in the after hours, the company cutting jobs, announcing its CEO is leaving. We'll break down that action. But first, we begin with a big earnings alert on Uber. The company just announced on its earnings call it expects to be EBITDA profitable by the fourth quarter of this year. Oh, that's a full year earlier than expected. Shares popping on the news, giving a little bit back, but nonetheless, well into the green, about 3.5%. Kate Rooney following it all in San Francisco and has more for us tonight. Hi, Kate.
That's right. Hey, Scott, the big highlight from the call just now, Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi moving up the timeline for profitability.
Our progress in 2019 and our 2020 plans gives me the confidence to challenge our teams to accelerate our EBITDA profitability target from full year 2021 to Q4 2020.
So moving the goalposts there, some other highlights from the quarter. Uber's still losing money, but not as much as expected. A better-than-expected EPS loss, that was a beat by 4 cents. On revenue, mostly in line, and full-year losses for 2019 came in at $1.1 billion. Gross bookings were a miss, though. We also saw some decelerating growth rates, and the CEO just saying on the call as well that they had sort of a tempered outlook about gross bookings for next year, and you can see the stock fell a little bit on that. I just got off the phone with a few analysts that are saying that's the reason for that. And Uber Eats as well, a big loss from Uber Eats in the quarter, which was expected. That was $461 million, almost doubling from the comparable quarter a year earlier. But again, Uber CEO drawing a line in the sand and saying that last quarter and this current Q1 quarter would be peak losses for Uber Eats. Scott?
All right. We appreciate it. Kate Rooney, thanks. So, Dan, you tell me. I mean, smaller than expected loss. You pull forward by a year your EBITDA profitability map.
Yeah.
And the stock's not getting that
huge. But didn't they, when Lyft reported last year and then the November quarter, they were almost forced when they were put on the spot to kind of match what Lyft said? Didn't they already tell us this?
But they're actually pulling it forward another year now. And I think what's going on here is that I think Dara caught a lot of heat because the Lyft guys got out in front of their profitability target and they were pretty firm about it. I'll just say this. The stock was trading up 10% maybe 15 minutes ago. It's come in a little bit. I think that 2020 guidance was a little softer than expected. So that's one thing. So
Eats is an anvil.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, he's saying a lot of things like we're going to accelerate M&A to kind of quicken that path to profitability. There's a lot of things that have to happen. And let's remember, this is called adjusted EBITDA. This is not a really particularly sound earnings metrics one way or another. So listen, this stock, you know, went down, got cut in half from its IPO to its lows in November 6th. That was into its IPO lockup. It's rallied about 50%. I think the pendulum has kind of shifted here. And now the company really has to put up. They caught up, at least from a sentiment standpoint, as far as what investors were thinking about a profitability to their main rival, and now here they are, and now they have to put up.
Well, let's talk about that setup a little bit, too, because if you look at Uber versus Lyft, just from a technical perspective, you have Uber above the 200-day. Lyft is the complete opposite. It's below the downward-sloping 200-day moving average. It actually tested it almost to the dollar and failed, and they both trade for about 4.5x sales, so you're getting a very similar valuation. Now, the question is, do you value the optionality in Uber's other businesses? And that's the key. Do you want focused or do you want Uber, which is trying to do a lot of things? I like the idea that Uber is starting to rationalize some of those businesses. We're all familiar with what they did in India. They're cutting costs from a headcount perspective. So I actually like Uber here if you can be patient and deal with some interim volatility.
Yeah, but you know, some of those, that optionality is the reason it was being priced at a discount. So you know, it's hard to know. And yeah, maybe the expense load attached to Uber Eats is going to be better in 2020 than expected. They sold the assets in India, which were definitely an anvil. Nice word, Scott.
Thank you.
But I think you have a case here where the outperformance of almost 1,200 basis points against Lyft, I think you've kind of had some of that run. As much as it seems sentiment has turned and maybe it gets to a place where people want to look at the operational leverage in this company, because that's really what you're talking about. If you get to a place where the incremental unit revenue dynamics in the U.S. are getting better, look, a lot of this flows straight through to the EBITDA line once they get there. That's what people could do, and you could see analysts coming out there to do it, but I think the stock's had a massive turnaround in sentiment.
Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Guy.
Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
And I expect to be playing tight end for the Giants this time next year. That's probably not going to happen either. And there's a long way from now till then, and this stock's going to have a lot of ups and downs. I think you're getting a gift right now. The stock's up 53% since the November 14th low. I say you take the money and run here, and you stay with Lyft, which is something we've been saying for a while. I don't think Lyft is getting back to that $63 level where it broke down from after what was a very good quarter last summer, but I think it's going to get close. So if playing Would You Rather, which we are right now, I would rather Lyft than Uber right
here. Mark Bavaro turning in his grave right now.
No, he's first of all, he's not turning in his grave. He's still alive, and he happens to be a huge Fast Money fan, Tim. Back to you, Scott.
The reference being how we can't even put yourself in the tight end spot. Anyway,
Can you really ever escape the fact with Uber that it went public too late, that it was already pretty mature by the time it went public, and it's always going to be fighting against that?
When you're seeing that over and over again, and I know we're going to talk about SoftBank in a little bit, but it's the funding environment for these later stage companies that are still private is more difficult. This may not be a huge impact, but when you think about DoorDash, Postmates, these are main competitors in the food delivery space. So maybe the more difficult funding environment for some of those later stage private companies is on the margin a benefit for Uber in that space.
Yeah, well, what about a consolidation in the delivery space helping Eats? If you have some consolidation,
but why is there
with
consolidation?
The competitors?
I mean, it just,
well, you got too many players. You got too much competition.
Right.
So somehow you would think that at some point somebody has to get together with somebody else, and maybe that helps the Eats business because the competition then disappears by one.
But I think
if not more.
Consolidation is happening for a couple of reasons, partly because some guys just aren't making money, and I think they're effectively dropping out. So, yes, if you get to some place where you can actually have pricing power in the delivery service, I don't think that's coming anytime soon. It's not structurally there.
I just want to make one point about your question, Scott, about did they go public too late? I think it's really important. The last 18 months really shows us that the public markets were a lot more discerning about profitability than the private markets. And so this was a shell game. Rates were really low. You had massive infrastructures like SoftBank's Vision Fund doing this. This was, they were just pushing the whole thing forward. So you tell me in 2019, if Uber had $13 billion in revenues and a net income loss of $4 billion, how would the public markets have treated greater losses on greater percentage of revenue, let's say a year or two ago? Not particularly well is my guess for, if you think about it that way, because if you go back and look at some of the ones that went public in the last few years, Twitter all the way back to 2012, Snap, and there's a whole host of others. The public markets have not been particularly kind, especially relative to the broad market.
I hear you, but people like Mark Cuban would say they went public too late after the bulk of the growth had already happened. Investors were essentially paying
right.
for
it. And everybody owned it.
Well, right.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And Dan, you're right, because the way that if you think about what's been coming out to the private markets and the way the markets have done that, whether it's WeWork, et cetera, et cetera. But think about the Federal Reserve and what the Federal I think private equity has just been given a new stoking of the fire. I mean, we've never had a bigger balance sheet in this country. I mean, these guys have thrown more gas in the fire. I think private equity is going to be running to list because money's free.
Right. Well, speaking of Uber, we are following a developing story on one of its biggest investors, SoftBank, reportedly attracting interest from activist investor Elliott Management. The Wall Street Journal says Elliott has taken a $2.5 billion stake in the company. Elliott confirming to CNBC a stake in SoftBank. It did not confirm the size, however. SoftBank shares have been under pressure over the past year as high-profile investments in companies like Uber and WeWork have failed to deliver. So are we setting up for a clash here? I mean, look, Paul Singer, Masa-san. Interesting.
Going head to head, or seemingly going ahead. And I think, listen, we talk about WeWork all the time for good reason, but there are other investments that they made that are probably done well that fall under the radar screen. You mentioned Uber and WeWork. I'm sure there are others that have done well. The stock got probably punished too much for the WeWork situation. With that said, to your question, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. We're setting up for a bit of a fight here. But in terms
Maybe.
Of the stock
we
itself,
don't know.
It would appear that way.
Is it a partnership?
You would know better than I. I mean, you speak to these people, so you let us know. But from my vantage point, this sets up for a bit of a battle.
Thank you.
No, it's true. Oh. What I said is not true.
I think everybody's trying to figure it out.
That's why we're
trying to figure it out.
Couldn't this just be, them looking at some of the parts? And I know this isn't necessarily a good exercise. And I think there's no question that there's been some governance concerns at SoftBank. But if you look at where it's trading, I think, Guy, this is what you're alluding to. I mean, the way the stock has moved, it's now trading at a discount to the NAV of the things that it owns.
Well,
so at some
about
point, this becomes
back.
What a hedge fund does. This is arbitrage.
They're talking about buying back $10 billion of the $20 billion in stock to try to rationalize the stock price with the size of the investment. So I wonder what that ends up doing to the share price, whether that's a positive or negative.
Well, if you want to know, you can dig into a 250-page report that Bernstein Research wrote a few weeks ago. And I remember it was really interesting. I mean, they were basically calling SoftBank the Berkshire Hathaway of technology. And so, you know, they were doing a sum of the parts thing. I think that gets to it about like page 124, something like that. You know, I fell asleep there.
That's but
listen, this is just not a name that, you know, U.S. investors can really trade particularly, at least people watching this show. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think the main thing here is that they're going to have pressure on them to continue to do the stuff that they did. I think that if you're investing and taking an activist position in SoftBank, you do want them to rationalize some of that stuff. But this is a company that's already dedicated $38 billion. I think the board has already approved to Vision Fund 2. This is the path that they're going. So if you didn't like what they were doing in Vision 1, they're going to Vision 2. And that goes to your point about where the opportunities in this investment world. And I think Masa sees them in the private markets, not particularly
public
markets.
Is this going to be Uber, though? I mean, if you think about, obviously, the flow through straight to Uber, and you've got Elliott, you know, at least pushing and pushing and pushing, and if effectively they have more control at SoftBank, is this, if you're an Uber holder, is this a good headline?
Let me also say that, I mean, Faber's sources have confirmed to him the size, so we don't have to say reportedly anymore. He's already gone on television and said that, too. So
right on.
He would know. All right, coming up, break out your rally cap, or is it time to take cover? What you should be doing with your money as stocks hit new all-time highs. Plus, we're all over the after-hours action in Pinterest and Wynn, both stocks on the move after their results. So we'll dig in when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Another record day on Wall Street. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ all closing at all-time highs. But wait a minute. Whatever happened to all the fear surrounding the coronavirus? Are investors getting too bullish too fast? Mr. Adami?
Yeah, or maybe people aren't bullish enough. That's probably me. The market's at all-time highs. Everybody's so happy about everything. The market's great. The economy's the best we've ever had in the history of our nation. Yeah, I get it. But
wow,
when you have...
sound really sarcastic there.
I am, because yeah. I was going to say, when you have Procter & Gamble trading at 24 times next year's earnings at all-time highs, Con Ed trading at 20... Con Ed, by the way, is a utility, in case you were wondering.
Is Con Ed the key to the market?
No, it's not, but the valuations are ridiculous. People are just paying up.
You get Con Ed right, man. I mean, you deservedly
so, I mean, here we are at the market, but with the VIX south of 15 again.
Did you have a big bill recently? Now you're mad?
No, I don't have Con Edison. I think I have JCP&L or PSE&G. I always get the two of them confused. And no, I didn't have a big bill because I opened my windows in the winter because you want that fresh air. Back to the market, though, you have 20 different warning signs flashing red and different metrics and different valuations. Nobody seems to care.
All right. Well, here's the thing. So the markets got literally they got plugged the way they always get plugged. You get this massive bit of liquidity. Right. We saw that in China after their markets were closed for a week and stock markets rip. But I guess if you're thinking about 2020 earnings, that should be the driver for U.S. stocks. You have to think about global growth. You cannot quantify what's going on with this virus. I'm not trying to sound dramatic whatsoever. But again, I said this 2 weeks ago. If the deaths and the cases doubled week after week after week, would that be significant? I don't know. But the reaction to whatever those numbers are the things that are going to put, they're basically a massive headwind to growth right now.
It's the same reaction we get every time we think we have some wall of worry to climb. And then, in fact, that wall is taken away.
Right. Isn't
so we're suddenly better off than we were.
Taken away
no
because of the L word that he used. Liquidity.
Well,
right?
And
environment is not going
this,
away.
Totally. Let's make it clear. We just had, essentially 4Q Federal Reserve jumping in. We basically had essentially the fourth time they've jumped in and given you more ammunition, and I don't think they're going to take it away anytime soon. So this is the same path that the market has taken every time we had trade war news, and in fact we ended up a year and a half later getting nothing done, and in fact we had a market that was higher.
Yeah. Well, if you think the market has come too far too fast, our next guest has three names to hide out in. Fundstrat's Rob Slimer is over at the Plasma with a safety triple play. Rob?
Great. Thanks, Scott. So let's put it all into context. We think the market cycle is still very much intact. There's more upside in the market through 2020. The issue is tactically, a lot of these weekly indicators that track 1 to 2 quarter shifts are overbought and starting to peak. So people are concerned. A lot of stocks run a long way, and it's understandable people are looking for other areas to be looking to put capital to. So we've got three ideas to take a look at. One of the things we did is we screened through a long list of stocks that technically, and we took them over to one of the new hires at Fundstrat, Brian Rauscher. And he does this earnings revision model. So stocks with the earnings revisions are starting to get less bad and starting to improve. And so we combine those names, and here are three of the stocks. So let's take a look at General Dynamics. Stocks had a big bear market right down to the 200-week. It's gone sideways and starting to base around the 200-week, and we're starting to get this little hook starting to develop in here. So it's a defensive name in the defense sector. It's not extended. It doesn't look like the stock market. And the relative strength, you've got to squint, but it's starting to turn here. So if the market comes in, we start to get a bit of a pullback, we think this is a timely name to own right here. Next name, we talked about the stock back on January 16th when we were on the show, and we still like it. It's the same sort of profile as General Dynamics, right? We have a big bear market through 18 and 19. It bases around that 200-week moving average, which is long-term support, secular support. And again, we're just starting to see the turn take hold, the relative strength starting to improve over the last month. So again, if we see a lot of these high flyers start to pull back in, we think this is a pretty good place to be. They're not crowded trades, they're not expensive, and the earnings backdrop starting to improve. And the last one, this is what one of my colleagues calls a green tomato, is Molson Coors. So that's a pretty nasty bear market over the last 3 or 4 years. It's down about 50, 60%, and now it's starting to bottom. So it's early, but again, it's not a crowded trade. This is not a name that looks like there's a lot of momentum to come out of the stock. In fact, earnings data is starting to get a little bit better. The technical pattern is starting to get better, and it's just starting to run up to that 200-week or 200-day, 40-week moving average. We think this is a great place to be putting capital, especially if you've got a six-month investment horizon.
All right, we appreciate it. Rob, thank you.
Thank you.
What do you think of these names? I think General Dynamics looks like the best chart. Look, it's above the 200-day. The 200-day is upward sloping. It's shown support there multiple times. But I want to talk a little bit about the earnings revision comment. I think that's really important. And back to the overall economy and what's been going on. I did bring a couple of charts along. I don't know if they can throw them up. But to the point about liquidity and lower interest rates, that leads better manufacturing data. The correlation is extremely high. You saw a better PMI print out of the U.S. So if you believe that manufacturing is going to recover, that also has a really high correlation with earnings revisions. Earning revisions get more and more positive as manufacturing hooks higher. So if you believe in that story, which I still do, I think the over the next couple of months, you could have the waters muddied a little bit because of what's going on with coronavirus. But to the point of positive earnings revisions potentially being a catalyst to support the market where it is now, I think that that's a very real possibility.
You gave me a nice segue, because speaking of Corona, I think Constellation is a great company. I think they've certainly their beer business at a time when beer sales are actually shrinking for most of the other players. They're seeing pretty solid high single digit growth. They've made a couple acquisitions. They've divested a couple acquisitions. This is one of the great consumer product companies in the world, I think. And I think at this valuation, it's interesting.
And quickly, General Dynamics discount to Lockheed Martin trades around 13.5 times next year's earnings, significantly off the all-time high. I think out of the, if you're playing would you rather,
it's you are. General.
I am again.
How many times are we going to play that this show?
So you can do it a few
every
times.
10 minutes?
So, well, not every 10 minutes, but it's one of those shows where you can actually
we're
do it. And I would
in,
rather General
twice.
Dynamics.
That's every 10 minutes.
General Dynamics!
All right, still ahead. We're talking pins and poker. Shares of Pinterest and Wynn both on the move after reporting results. We're going to bring you the trade coming up. Plus, we're all over Uber's conference call. It's already moving the stock. Coming up, you're going to hear from the man who literally wrote the book on Uber. Mike Isaac is with us. We'll get his rating on the company's latest quarter. Stay with us. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Aurora Cannabis. There they are right now, down 12.5%. On news, its CEO is stepping down. The company also saying it's cutting almost 500 jobs. You want to take a...
I will. In fact, I was just at the ArcView Cannabis
event
for 2 days talking about this stuff. It's about balance sheet. I mean, these guys have $200 million in their balance sheet at the end of the year, essentially. And they've got $140 million in CapEx. They need to raise money. This cost savings dynamic is what you're hearing throughout, especially the Canadian LPs, frankly. This is a $2.5 billion company. At one point, it was a $15 billion company. And I actually think it's going to go lower. I think the balance sheet needs fortification, and I think it's going to come with equity dilution.
GW Pharma's having a big move in the after hours. I'm trying to get the news now, but if you look, that's round trip. It's going from 90 to 180, back to 90. Now it's basically made a double bottom. Whatever news that seems obviously to be positive, and this is a name that we mentioned for the last couple months. So in that space, Scott, GWPH gets you done still.
You like that better than Aurora.
You see, you're not going to suck me in. You're not going to suck me in. You're not going to suck me in.
It's 6 minutes too early.
I would rather GW Pharma.
We'll see where we are at 5:30. We know where he's going. Moving on, the earnings keep rolling in. Pinterest and Wynn both on the move after reporting results. We have full team coverage breaking it all down. Contessa Brewer standing by on Wynn. We kick things off, though, with Julia Boorstin and more on Pinterest's quarter, Julia.
Scott, Pinterest shares soaring on better than expected top and bottom line results, as well as user growth. The stock gaining about 17% in after hours trading. That's on top of its 5% growth going into the close earlier today. Now, Pinterest monthly active users grew 26% from a year ago to 335 million. That's 4 million more than projected. The company pointing to the value in making it easier to shop on Pinterest, with companies increasing their uploads to catalog feeds by 70% from the third quarter to the fourth quarter, and clicks on product pins doubling over the past year. The company saying they're planning to launch a verified merchants program in coming months. James Cordwell of Atlantic Equities telling us the impressive revenue upside shows Pinterest is back on track following the air pocket the company hit in Q3. The earnings call is about to get underway in a couple of minutes, and investors are likely to press the company for details on how Pinterest plans to make more money from its international user base, where average revenue per user is just 21 cents. That's compared to the $4 the company gets in average revenue per user here in the U.S. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Julia, we appreciate it very much. You've been long this stock for
a
while.
So this is one that's interesting. I pitched this about a month ago, and I really think it was a scarcity sort of thing. I think a lot of these names, and we were just talking about with Uber, they closed the year at the dead lows. These are some of the 2019 IPOs. The sentiment couldn't have been worse, and this is a company that's doing all the right things. When you think the fact that they gained 13 million users on a sequential basis, up 26% year over year, 335 million. That's, I think, more than Twitter. Sales growing at about 30%. That's likely to be the case for a while here. And if you get that ARPU that's outside the U.S. at 21 cents, what Julia just said, that's basically zero compared to $4 in the U.S. There's a big band for this thing to grow into that valuation. So to me, I think it's a pretty niche thing. I think it would be a great tab on Walmart.com. That was part of my pitch last month, but who knows?
It's interesting because I would have thought after last quarter that you'd reset what were not great expectations for 2020. And yet, apparently, you know, they weren't reset that, you know, that modestly. And in fact, this left a lot of room for them to outperform here. $12.5 billion company. I mean, this is a significant play. And I do think that there's scarcity in the online social kind of, you know, whatever you call this, a retail stock, whether you want to call this a social media stock. There are places that people need to go.
International, quick, monthly average, like three times the size of the United States. So if you get even half of the ARPUs of the U.S., I mean, this is a $40 stock. Good for Dan. And earlier you mentioned, you know, companies that went public too late, very mature. Pinterest is one of those companies as well. And I think it's getting to sea legs. We talked about this a while ago.
Legs.
I think you stay with pins. I happen to have a Pinterest page as well. You should visit
it. And you have a sea leg.
Excuse me?
What?
You should see my page later tonight.
I don't know what that means.
A Pinterest page, it is. It's a very
good
page.
What do you put up there?
I have, like, fashion, rock and roll, trivia,
wallpaper,
Ranger hockey. There it is, as a matter of fact, for you folks at home.
Yeah, but to be fair, you know, friend of the show, Guy had that in 2013. Rick Heitzman, an early investor for First Mark, came on the show, told us about pins. You created a page.
Nice job on the power pitch, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Surrounded that trade.
Blind squirrel.
Well, good stuff.
All right. Great segue. Thanks.
Thanks.
We'll get serious for a moment. We do have a news alert with the latest numbers on the coronavirus out of China. Our Meg Terrell delivering that for us. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Scott. These are numbers out of Hubei province, considered sort of the epicenter of where the outbreak is happening in China. New cases coming in at 2,447. Yesterday, there were more new cases, almost 3,000 yesterday. So that does represent, while there are more cases, a potential slowing in the number of new cases we're seeing. They're reporting an additional 69 deaths today, compared with 70 confirmed deaths yesterday. So again, a slight slowing there. This does bring the total to more than 30,000 cases across the world and 634 deaths. We do expect to get more numbers out of the rest of China later tonight, so those numbers will increase. But guys, the World Health Organization saying today they did see the first slowing in those numbers today, talking about yesterday's numbers. 2 days, certainly not enough to say this is a trend, but they are saying it is going in the possible right direction, Scott.
Yeah, important nonetheless. Meg, thank you so much. That's Meg Terrell. By the way, tune into our special report, CNBC's Outbreak Coronavirus. That's tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We have more on the coronavirus. Wynn Resorts just addressed the outbreak on its own earnings call. Contessa Brewer listening in and has the details for us. Hi, Contessa.
Hey there, Scott. Yeah, coronavirus top of mind for Wynn Resorts. CEO Matt Maddox kicked off the earnings call, tackling the challenges it presents in Macau, where Wynn gets three quarters of its revenue.
It was a controlled and organized closure of the casino. We do still have our hotel and a couple of restaurants open for the few remaining guests that are in Macau. But during this time, while the casino is closed, our operating expense burn rate is roughly $2.4 million to $2.6 million a day.
$2.5 million every day while the casinos were closed. Maddox says it's largely payroll for the 12,200 employees, says the focus has got to be on them right now. The casino is on the hook for these salaries, even though the gambling operations have ceased. And now, of course, you have travel restrictions in place globally, in many cases preventing Chinese tourists from traveling. For instance, they can't come to the United States. They can't go to Las Vegas. And look, that segment had already suffered last year anyway. Baccarat volumes were down 30% year over year. On the call, they said that equaled a $50 million decline in EBITDA. Plus, Wynn's Las Vegas president says these Far East visitors, well, they can't get back to China, so they are continuing to gamble at Wynn and other casinos. She called it a very choppy market. But they're saying, look, it's going to ramp up again. As soon as the outbreak is controlled and contained, you will see people wanting to travel again, Scott.
Yeah, it's a choppy stock chart as well, Contessa,
yeah,
after
sure
hours.
Is.
Thanks so much. That's Contessa Brewer following Wynn for us.
So, look, I without any lack of sensitivity towards what's going on globally, when you've seen these types of health crises in the past, the most extreme sentiment moment's been the time to buy. And in fact, I don't know if we've gotten there yet. You got gross gaming revenue coming out of Macau for January down 11.3%. I think it's obviously going to get worse. But I think the to the extent that Wynn is priced in a lot of this pain, as Contessa said, 70% of their revenues are coming from Chinese locals. So I think you priced in a lot of bad news. The stock wants to hold 120. It looks like it has in the short run. I think it's a buying opportunity.
I think, Scott, the last time you hosted, I think, was January 28th, and you correctly pushed back when we were talking about Las Vegas Sands and said, why would you try to buy this stock here for a trade? It was trading around $65, and we said, it's a great question, but the stock has probably priced it in from 78 or so down to 65. It held the highs we saw in November, and now it's rallied $4.5, $5. I get it's not a big deal, but I think that's exactly what Tim is talking about, trading around stocks that have probably been beaten up somewhat unjustifiably.
So look, near term, I agree. It held the 200-day pretty firmly when it was down 20%. But to the point of being priced in, I actually went back and just looked at the next 12 months PE. In 2018, it was trading in the 190s. Now it's trading far lower than that. And the next 12-month PE is actually about the same as it was in the 190s. So you're not actually getting that much of a value, even given the much lower stock price. So I wouldn't be all that excited about jumping into the name right now, just because the valuation, even with the lower price, hasn't re-rated that much.
And back to the chart, though. Before this announcement, this chart was breaking out, just to be clear. I mean, sentiment around this stock was actually getting to a place where people were starting to see greater free cash flow and some strength from some of those Asian properties. So you can't eradicate what's going on, obviously, as we can't eradicate this virus. But I think that is the sense that this stock is actually, this might be just a pause in the road of a stock that's re-rated.
All right. Well, for more on today's earnings, head to our website, CNBC.com. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
We reveal our mystery chart. What's got this chip stock spiking higher today? And later, biotech keeps booming. How options traders are playing the markets. We've got that and a whole lot more coming up on Fast Money.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Micron leading the chips higher following an upgrade at Raymond James today. It's our call of the day. Ray J upping Micron to a strong buy for market perform, thanks to improving supply and demand conditions for DRAM and NAND memory chips. Micron has been a red-hot stock of late. It's up 80% from its June lows, and it's up roughly 10% this year. So can it continue to go higher? It's not like the analyst, because I read the note, because we talked about it earlier today.
Oh, he's pumped.
Says it's, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not like they're discovering something new. You could easily say the call's late.
You could say that, Scott.
But if you believe it has a lot more upside. Are you, like, finished laughing at your own joke?
I just mentioned this. So he joins 25 other analysts who rate this stock a buy. There's very few who rate it a hold and a sell. We know that that doesn't really matter. It helps the sentiment a little bit, but it seems like everyone's getting on one side of this sort of thing. I just mentioned this. If these stocks are making 52-week highs, given what we know is happening to the supply chain, what we know is happening potentially to disruption of manufacturing going on, obviously, in China, and then there's the demand aspect. You know, ultimately, the 5G thing, if everyone's playing for this super cycle upgrade thing, I'm not, but you were likely to see some pent-up demand. And if the stocks are trading just fine, then this stock's going to go back to its 52-week highs near 65. I'm just saying, it's just a momentum.
What do you got, Mikhail?
Well, doesn't Micron trade every time, like, less bad means go higher, less good means go way lower. I mean, that's and the fact is that the negative earnings revisions on this company were about minus 9%. I was just looking at some stats on that. So it's a one of the top the highest kind of negative earnings revision momentum of the semiconductors. And that's something that was less bad than people thought. And this stock is priced in less bad for the last 3 months. So I don't think this is a reason to get excited. I think we priced in less bad, and then soon it's going to be about less good. And I think you're at the top of a range.
Dan flagged. Where was anybody in May of 2018? I probably don't know where I was, but I'll tell you, Micron
right
was around $62, and that's where it's going to top out at. You can have this major double top. I can see it coming as clear as day. So were they late? Yes. Is there a little more room? Maybe. But now you're picking up nickels on in a freeway, I think. So I think you're taking profits here rather
than
starting
a position.
Isn't
nickels in front of a steamroller?
Or steamroller, which is a great James Taylor
train.
Song,
okay,
by the way.
Okay, but not on a freeway.
Nickels on the train tracks is the...
No, nickels
what
in
difference
front of
the does it matter if you're picking up nickels with things coming at you? It's going to hurt, so don't do it.
I think you have room to get out of the way.
The more you know.
It's really trade school.
It's really deep and funny, but we got to go.
Well, of course we do.
Another winner today was Twitter. That stock topping the tape on earnings. Twitter reporting its biggest quarterly user growth ever, with daily active users hitting an all-time high. Stock having its best day in more than a year. So is Twitter a name that you should own, Jeff?
Yeah, look, growth was great and expectations were low. I heard you talking about it on halftime today, but I think it's worth repeating. When you look at the sell-side analysts, there are 8 buy ratings and then there are 35 hold or sell ratings. So the sentiment is low. If you see another good quarter, I think it's very possible that that starts to shift and that becomes a catalyst. And this is really just my opinion, but it doesn't seem like they've gotten ads quite right yet. When I'm on Twitter, I never click on any ads. When I'm on Instagram, I'm constantly clicking on ads. So if they can get that right, and I know there's a difference in platform there, but if they can get that right, I also think that could be a catalyst to even faster ad growth. So I actually like the name here.
Well, it's the fourth straight quarter of accelerating daily monthly active users. It's a case where you've got advertising reacceleration in the U.S. But more importantly, I think this stopped just the bleed on sentiment that we saw after the last quarter. There's nothing extraordinarily different other than the fact that I think people were shocked after the last quarter that expenses were growing well in advance of where the advertising revenues were. They're more or less in line now. That's the snapback.
First quarter guidance wasn't great, and the stock still had a move like this. Ad engagements, I think, were up 29% year over year, which is a pretty good number given where they are. So I think you can continue to own the stock. I think people got off sides on the upside, and they definitely did below $30. I'd say you'd stay with Twitter right here.
Okay, well, coming up, check out the after hours action in a stock we talked about at the very top of the show. It's Uber. We're going to bring you the latest buzz from the conference call. There's the stock right now up just shy of 5%. It's up higher than that. It's about half the gains that we've seen in the after hours. And later, one options trader is betting on a 20% breakout for this biotech name. We'll reveal it ahead, much more fast in 2. All right, we have some news on Amazon developing right now. Contessa Brewer has it. Contessa?
Well, Jeff Bezos must be in a selling mood because he just sold 666 million and change more of stock. That's on top of the $1.8 billion worth of Amazon stock that he already sold this week. You know, he has said in the past he plans to sell $1 billion worth of his stock every year to help fund Blue Origin. But now this is way up over $2 billion, Scott.
Wow. Must be nice. Contessa, yeah. Thanks. That's Contessa Brewer. All right, moving on. Uber shares taking off on news the company expects to be EBITDA profitable by Q4 of this year. That's a full year earlier than expected. We have a big interview coming up tomorrow with Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi. That's exclusively on Squawk Box at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. Let's talk more, though, about Uber right now with the man who literally wrote the book on the company. Mike Isaac is New York Times technology reporter and the author of Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber. Mike, welcome. It's good to have you on tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
What's your reaction to not only the quarter, but maybe more importantly, the remarks from Dara on the call about being profitable a year earlier than expected?
No, it was surprising. I was waiting for another quarter of bloodbaths and basically laying out how much money they're burning. But his quote really struck me at the top of the call and the remarks, which is the era of growth at all costs is over. And I think you just wouldn't have heard that from unicorn companies and especially newly public companies just a year ago. But Uber's really trying to prove that this is what we're doing. We're trying to cut costs in many different ways, and the street is not willing to to put up with insane growth, but at the expense of burning cash to get there.
Yeah, but I mean, I know, I get it. It sounds good, but they are still spending a lot of money.
Yeah, look, I think the big question mark is the food delivery business. Like, you know, ride hailing now is actually the big sort of high point was that ride hailing is actually not only increasing, but starting to stabilize and perhaps maybe can actually turn a profit earlier than one would think. And we're seeing that those trips grow in Latin America and some other regions where it was a question mark. But food delivery is like the thing that, you know, there's a lot of irrationality there. If you have companies like DoorDash, which is willing to burn tons of money, as well as Grubhub and a bunch of well-funded competitors in the space, it's going to be hard for them to turn a profit quicker. So that's where it's still painful for them.
How do you get your arms around the issue of regulatory laws that have been passed in California and elsewhere around who's an employee, who's not, and how the company is ultimately going to have to deal with that?
Yeah, that's the other. I mean, I think there are two big problems for 2020 are, you know, again, food delivery and really what the fate of what employees are going to be. Are they employees? Are they contractors? Are they workers? Right now in California, where I am, there's, this bill AB5 that is essentially saying that the drivers could be considered employees based on current tests. And now Uber is trying to basically make a lot of different tweaks to its platform to shift how they treat drivers. And they're very small, but they ultimately add up to the idea that they're just contractors. And they've vowed to spend something close to $90 million with other delivery companies fighting this in a ballot initiative this year. So it's not settled. It's still a big question mark, but they're not going to take it, you know, without a fight.
Yeah. Dan Nathan's next to me has a question for you, Mike.
Hey Mike. So, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the ride hail market. At what point do you think, as we get closer to profitability, investors may start to focus on this advanced technologies group within Uber, which is really this autonomous division? Yeah. And will that kind of be the next leg of growth for this company?
No, totally. I was talking to one of your producers earlier, and that's my biggest question. You know, if you remember back in 2016, 2017, the big drumbeat was, we're going to do autonomous. This is going to be the future of how cars operate, and not just us. You know, we have to catch up with Google. And now, you know, not just Uber, but really sector-wide, everyone's just sort of cooling on autonomous. And I think coming back down to earth on how long it really will take to get there. And if you look at how expensive for Uber in particular the autonomous division is, it's not cheap, right? They have to spend a lot of money and essentially had to do a separate funding vehicle to make that work for them to kind of save their balance sheet on how much it costs. I want to know what their long-term plans for it are. Is Dara going to keep it? There's been talk internally of, do they spin it out? Do they sell it to some automaker? They haven't really been clear, and there are employees that I talked to in there that are still kind of questioning it. So I would love to know if there's real renewed commitment to it or if they just want to ditch it at some point.
Gotcha. Hey, Seymour's got one.
Yeah, Mike, real quick, international or domestic-only model. That's also what defines the difference between these two companies. They certainly want to talk about Latin America. They want to talk about what they're doing in other parts of the world. Is that the right strategy?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's the real difference between whether you're an Uber or a Lyft believer, right? Like, if you're a Lyft bull, part of your thesis is essentially we have focus, we're sticking to the U.S. and Canada, and this is where we can focus on turning a profit eventually, which I don't think is outlandish. But that said, you know, Uber has how many different irons in the fire? They have Uber Health, which is attacking, you know, bringing people to their doctor's appointments. They have Uber Freight. They have Uber Comfort, which is just increasing the margin on Uber X rides. So, like, look, they're spending a lot of money and they're doing a lot to try a lot of different things. But the other argument of that is there's a lot more growth potential when you have so much more of the market you're attacking. So I don't know. I don't want to rule them out entirely.
Appreciate the time, as always, Mike. And a reminder one more time, Andrew Ross Sorkin exclusive with Dara tomorrow, 7 a.m. Eastern, on Squawk Box. You definitely want to check that out. Coming up, is it time to buy biotech?
Guys.
One of our traders sees a big move higher for one big name. We're going to bring you that trade straight ahead. We also want to show you a live look at our Kramer cam. Jim is spicing things up tonight. He is chatting with the McCormick CEO. That stock's been red hot over the past year. Will the run continue? Find out at the top of the hour. And following Mad Money, don't forget to tune into our special report, Outbreak Coronavirus. That's coming up at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're back right after this. We're back on Fast Money. Biotech is burning up, the sector on pace for its best week in more than a year. And over in the options market, there is one name that's getting a lot of attention. Mike Coe is at the Plasma. Break it all down with some options action, Mike.
Yeah, so it's very common for us to see unusual options activity going into a catalyst like earnings. We're going to be talking about Gilead, but Gilead actually already announced earnings. Yet today we saw more than five times the average daily call volume after that earnings had already come out and been viewed somewhat as disappointing. What I thought was very interesting in this call activity was purchases of the April 80 calls. One block of those, 3,000 of which traded for $1.10, over 30,000 trading overall. That is a bet that the stock is going to rise above that $80 strike price by the $1.10 in premium. That's an increase of nearly 20%. Now, if you take a look at the chart, you're going to see just how notable this is. This stock has been pretty moribund now for a year. But I would point out that this stock is also relatively cheap. It's trading at about 11 times earnings right now. Even if it gets all the way up to this level right here, that would represent about $100 billion market capitalization. The company is going to do probably $8.2, $8.3 billion in earnings this year. The stock was actually worth $140 billion at one point. So I think what's going on here, someone's risking just 1.6% of the stock price. I don't know what the catalyst is, but there were a lot of bullish bets. And, you know, this is still going to be a reasonably priced stock at those levels. About 12.2 times earnings is what we're going to be looking at if it gets to that price.
Are you on OA tomorrow night?
I will be indeed. We can talk about this a little bit more and some other exciting stuff.
Look forward to it. 5:30, right?
That's right.
Are you? Come on. You said like you don't know. 5:30. You know. You've hosted the show.
You hosting tomorrow?
I'm trying to host it right now.
We should talk about Gilead real quick because, you know, think about what just happened. Merck just announced they're spinning off a unit. I'm not suggesting there's any M&A here, but I think that might be part of it. Plus the fact that for five times at least in 2019, Gilead bounced off 62.5. So this makes a lot of sense to me.
Can I resume hosting it now?
Go.
Thank you. Where are we going here? Oh, and today we saw two new biotech stocks go public. Well, the thing was moving.
Yeah, it's not your fault, I guess.
In the wrong direction, I might
add.
Well,
you could have adjusted.
Well, I was going to read it backwards. Mills, Jeff, hear biotech like you do.
What? Is that a question? Is that a question?
The prompter was going the other way.
You want me to answer that? Look, I think Gilead, working on a short-term breakout, I like the valuation. I think you could play it here. Look at IBB, the overall industry ETF. You know, that's having a tough time at 122. It's at that level right now. So pay close attention to the current level. I think whether it moves up or down is going to be very important.
All right. For more options action, don't forget, be sure to tune into the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Up next, Final Trades. Oh, one more time, a reminder, that man right there, Dara Khosrowshahi, is the Uber CEO. He will be with Andrew Ross Sorkin for an exclusive interview tomorrow morning on Squawk Box at 7 a.m. Eastern time. Do not miss it. Let's do final trades now. Timmy, you're up first.
Hard to gauge where we are with this virus. Certainly, we talked earlier in the show about possibly some better news. Emerging markets were certainly the headline, the head of the storm. EEM has actually traded back significantly. I think there's still room for this to go. China's throwing a lot of money at the problem. I think you had good news going into this. EEM.
Jeff.
You know, obviously GE has gotten pummeled, but industrials tend to do well when manufacturing bottoms. As I was talking about earlier, I think that's happening. It's made a two-year base. It looks to be moving higher, and I think that could continue here.
Daniel.
Yeah, Guy mentioned Merck, some of the spin on that one. I think it's finding some support here. Maybe a play for this one back to 92, the prior high.
Guy.
I always found it interesting that there's a you engage, number one. Number two, General Dynamics, Mr. Schleimer got me thinking.
All right, great. Thank you. That does it for us. Mad Money with Kramer starts now.